Members-elect of the House of Representatives of the 65th Legislature of the State of Montana, please come to order.
With that, Secretary of State Corey Stapleton officially kicked off the 65th Montana Legislature on Monday. I'm Jackie Yamanaka. In this week's Capital Connections, we'll get a broad overview of the state budget from two leaders on the House Appropriations Committee. I want to welcome the chair of House Appropriations Committee, Representative Nancy Balance. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give our listeners an overview through your eyes? Where is the state budget right now? Because they may have heard stories, they may have read stories in the newspaper that the 2017 session is budget, budget, budget. And they might have this idea that maybe the sky is falling, that big cuts are coming.
There are two issues that we typically look at, and the first is whether or not we have enough money coming into the state to cover our expenses. We're in a situation right now where we have less money coming in than we have commitment for expenses. So that's when you hear cut, cut, cut. The second issue is we have had an ending fund balance, or some people call it a rainy day fund, but it's a way to manage through any surprises, of about $300 million. And that's practically zero. So we don't see a quick fix to that. So we're dealing with those two problems. One, we have to cut our expenses so that they don't exceed the money coming in. And then the second is that we have to make sure that we backfill some of that money that is no longer in that fund balance that's used for things like cash flow to pay the bills as they come in. We have to have that money sitting there ready to pay the bills. So those are the two things that we're looking at. The first one, when we look at the next biennium, we're looking at 2018 and 2019, and we see that problem being fixed by 2019. By 2019, we should again have enough money coming in to cover our expenses. So we will cut to make sure that we can balance the budget in at the end of 2017 and then beginning into the 2018 year. And then we'll start working on having cash in an ending fund balance.
So ending fund balance, again, it's a quasi-rainy day fund, not truly a rainy day fund. Basically, it's if people think about their checking account, they have a little set aside just in case.
That's a good way to think about it, and part of it is if you think about your checking account, you don't have all of the bills coming in on a regular basis where you know exactly what's going to happen when. So you always have to make sure you have enough cash in your account to cover the bills that do come due, and that's pretty much how this gets used, is to keep that cash flow working the way it should.
I know there was some controversy about leaving $300 million in reserve in the checking account, the state's checking account, after the 2015 session. But, you know, looking back now, if hindsight's 2020, is it a good thing that was there? How do you balance that? Because I know... And I know we're going back in time, but there were some that said that was too much money and we should give that back to Montanans. But through your lens, again, as House Appropriations Chair, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that I still think that 300 is high. I think probably closer to 200 makes more sense. Somewhere between 150 and 200 makes more sense, just looking at the way the state does business and what our bills are and how the money comes in. But having said that, you still need to have some way of backfilling that funding if you need it. If you go beyond, say you have $200 million in the bank. If you exceed that, just the way you might exceed your checking account, you have to have something that you can pull money from. So the state has laws in place to handle that, ways that they can do short-term borrowing and that sort of thing. So I think what we really need to do is, if we're going to talk $200 million ending fund balance instead of $300, we have to get serious and talk about, okay, if the bills come in a way that's unexpected and we have to pay, where is that money going to come from? what does it cost us if we have to take out short-term loans and that sort of thing. So we'll be working on that a little bit, too, to kind of shore up that part of it.
And I want to let our listeners know that your vocation really for many years was in private business and dealing with budgets, mm-hmm. but your avocation is woodworking.
It is, yeah.
And if you're looking at pieces of wood, you know, whether they're dowels or boards or, you know, whatever it might be, the materials, could you make... as an example, the state budget, and
sure.
you've got all these pieces, you know, some are together, some are not, some are lying around, some you don't know about, and
sure.
then how do you build it into something that's constitutional and yet serves a policy needs for Montana?
Mm-hmm. It's tough. And first, as you said, you build it in pieces. So, for example, I do a lot of toys these days. My two grandsons like that. And so if I'm building a toy truck, for example, I might have a chassis that I'm building at the same time I'm building the cab, at the same time I'm building some of the other parts of the structure. So that's where the subcommittee process comes in. The subcommittee chairs really have to be experts in their field and dive deeply into their subcommittee budgets. So we split it up in pieces. You don't try to just do it all at one time. And then the other important thing is you have to have a plan. I mean, you have to know where you're going and what the end picture is going to look like. So that's where we talk about, you know, our number one plan is making sure that we don't have more spending than what we have money coming in. And number two, that we have enough money in our checking account, so to speak, that we can cover the expenses as they're billed to us. So having a plan and a design and a sequence of events to move through, and that's really how the budget is built. So we come in, though, with sometimes a product that appears to be already in place, such as the governor's budget. So we have to take a look at that and say, does that match the budget that we think we should be building? And in this case, there are significant differences. There are things that we need to say may not happen. For example, the governor's budget includes a lot of taxes which may not be passed. It includes taking money out of the infrastructure fund and backfilling it with bonds, and that may not pass. So we need to make sure that we kind of go back to a starting point and then start building forward, rather than to take this project that's already complete and then trying to kind of piecemeal take it apart.
I guess you bring up a good point then. Where is the governor's budget in terms of, is it the starting point?
No, and we'll be talking through the starting point with the subcommittee chairman to make sure that they take motions at the first meeting that they have that create that starting point. So, for example, the governor has taken... by law, he had to cut 5% out of each one of the agencies. So we will start there for sure. Then the next thing, though, that the governor has done, we may do a little bit differently. We may look at some of those agencies. For example, 5% was cut out of K-12 education. Well, we know that's not going to fly. You end up putting it back. So we'll change that. Make it about 1.5% instead. So where we need to adjust, where we think we need to adjust, we will. Then the next thing the governor had in his budget were a number of adds back in. So we will not add those in until the subcommittee discusses them. So our starting point will really be once the 5% cuts have been made and the vacancy savings have been taken, and that'll be our starting point.
The Republicans have the majority in both the House and the Senate. What role do you see for the minority party, the Democrats, that are going to be on House Appropriations? What kind of voice will they have at the table, both at the subcommittee level and the full Appropriations Committee level?
Well, definitely at the subcommittee level. And we have, those are joint Senate and House committees, so we'll have minority and majority House and Senate. And their job is to dig deeply into these requests that are being made to add money back in. So if we start with our 5%, then we look pretty good. We can pay our bills, we can balance the budget. So if we left it right there, we'd probably be okay. But then there are additional things that people want, and that's where you really get into the negotiations, really trying to understand how much money you have to spend, and then what are your priorities. And priorities are going to be different in some cases between the minority and majority party. So we talk them through and try to give everyone a voice, but at the end of the day, a vote is taken, and the majority of votes will win the day, whether that's the majority party or whether that's a group of some of both mm-hmm. that cross the lines.
You know, your thoughts about building coalitions, or do you think, I mean, it's very early on that, you know, really we'll see party line type votes. What is, I guess, your thoughts about getting buy-in from the minority party when it comes to this big policy bill, even though people think it's a big spreadsheet type bill?
Sure.
It's really the overarching policy bill yeah. as well.
Well, the first thing that has to happen is we need to have coalitions built around what the priorities are. So for example, if infrastructure is truly a priority, then we need to talk about that funding before we talk about something like a preschool program, for example. That you know, we need to clearly understand where those priorities fall. Otherwise, you end up having a lot of coalition building and discussion around things that are never going to happen because you can't afford them. So in a year like this one, we need to be so clear about what our priorities are, because we just can't put everything in that we're seeing in terms of requests.
Now, certainly this is a representative form of government, and Montanans spoke and they elected their representatives, some of whom sit on appropriations. But for those Montanans who maybe don't have a member of the House or the Senate dealing with the budget, what advice would you give them if they would like to give input on what they think should be priorities in the budget?
We have that from time to time, and often what I advise people to do is send a letter to every member of the Appropriations Committee. And that's fairly easy to do through our communication system here in the legislature. Emails are probably not as effective, just because I probably get 250 emails a day, and I can't possibly go through them all. Letters are fairly effective. You can sit down across the table, discuss it with someone, and that works pretty well. The other thing is show up at the committee hearings. If there is a particular issue that you believe is important, look at the subcommittee schedule, see when it's scheduled for hearing, and come and be there in person. And if you can't, and it's the middle of winter and it's tough to get around, but if you can't, send a letter to the committee chairman, and then the committee chairman will put that into the record as well.
I'm curious, as a committee chair, when someone comes, you know, from far northwest Montana, far northeast Montana, southeast Montana, etc., when they state their name and their community, what goes through your mind? And they're testifying, for example, on the budget. What are you thinking?
In terms of the fact that they've traveled the great distance that they have, I don't know that I've ever thought of it that way. I think that it is so important to hear from the public. And more we have people show up who really understand that their voice is heard and should be heard. So I think whether they come from next door in Helena, or whether they come from Miles City, or they drove from Kalispell, is not really the part that's important. It's what is their message. If they clearly are advocating for something and state their case clearly, that does get our attention.
Do you say more weight, perhaps, than the agency representatives or those who are paid lobbyists?
In some cases, yeah. In some cases, if someone is making a clear case, the thing that's hard to gauge is whether that's one person speaking or whether it's representative of a larger group. So that gets a little bit more difficult to kind of sort out. But often people will bring things up that people have not thought of before. So, you know, it is interesting always to hear from.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, but I want to thank you so much. The Appropriations Chair, the very powerful House Appropriations Committee, Nancy Valance, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jackie.
I'd like to welcome the Vice Chair of House Appropriations Committee, Democrat, Representative Kelly McCarthy of Billings. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you, Jackie. It's a pleasure.
What are you telling folks where the Montana budget is?
Well, there's a couple things that I want people to first of all understand, because most of the talk about the budget sounds extremely negative right now, and it can make you kind of concerned about the economy of your state. But we're actually doing really well in Montana. Now, we have to deal with some things. The way we craft the budget is we try to look into the future 2 years and estimate what income is going to be. That's a very challenging thing to do, and it's one of the reasons we try to have money in the bank, you know, the sort of grain in the bin stuff that you hear about, because if we happen to be off on some of those things, then we don't have to start cutting services and holding special elections and panic in between sessions. That said, the challenges that we face is when we looked at this budget a couple years ago, I don't think anybody predicted that the price of oil would get down to $28 a barrel. You know, that has an impact. There's been a big decrease in agricultural prices, so that has an impact on the budget. Corporate tax was not as high as we anticipated, so there was a number of things that, as we read the tea leaves, just didn't get quite right. But thanks that we had money in the bin, we were able to ride that out. But we have to look forward. So things that I do want people to know is unemployment is still extremely low. Personal income taxes are higher than we anticipated, so people are earning more money than we thought they were. Manufacturing growth in Montana leads the nation. So there's a number of great things. You know, when we do things up here, diversifying the economy, there's a number of those things that we had that made this not as bad as our neighbors are dealing with. You know, North Dakota, Wyoming, New Mexico, Alaska are in a lot bigger problems than we are, because I think Montanans today and in the past were a lot smarter about preparing for things like this.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying the sky is not falling, but it could be a bumpy,
bumpy
flight.
The sky is definitely not falling. Really, it's the rise of the income curve is a little bit flatter than we thought it was going to be, so we're going to have to adjust the budget accordingly. It is going to be tough to find money for new programs, but the income into the state of Montana is still steadily increasing year on year. So it's not a drop in income. It's just a lower rate of growth. Because of those factors I mentioned earlier. You know, the $28 a barrel oil, nobody predicted that. So
there's been press reports that going into this budget session already, there's discussions about reductions in spending in agencies' current budgets, the budgets that run through the end of June. Your thoughts?
Well, there's been a letter that's sent out to a number of agencies who looked like they had money left in their budget that was allocated last time, and had asked them to, you know, consider whether, you know, they actually needed the money or could they turn it back to the state. And if they do that in this budget cycle, which ends on the 30th June 2017, it will actually impact the 2017 base budget. And, you know, if that should occur, then it kind of changes our starting point. So we kind of have like a, it's kind of like going up to bat, but the home plate keeps moving on you sort of thing. I don't know that that's totally necessary, because if they don't spend those funds, it's going to get reverted back to the state anyway. Like they have no obligation to spend them, you know, and we as legislators should probably not incentivize. We should be rewarding people who do use the monies that we allocate to them more judiciously, and not scare them into thinking that, you know, oh no, like, you know, we didn't spend it this year, but it doesn't mean that something's not going to happen next year, and we need to, you know, use these resources to respond to the needs of the people of Montana.
What are the priorities for Democrats? You know, as you, the Democrat vice chair of House Appropriations Committee, have you been given, priorities from the caucus of things that you're willing to fight for, things you're willing to negotiate on?
Well, we're kind of going through the process where I go to my caucus because I'm in the position where I am now. I understand that when I speak, I'm not just speaking for Kelly anymore. I'm a representative of the minority caucus in the House. So we're going through that process to narrow down exactly what they want me going in that room and working towards. But that said, it's going to be all around working families. You know, that's the lifeblood of Montana. It's where most of us hang out, and really we're looking for opportunities to make sure that our kids can graduate high school and have a good paying job waiting for them, you know, create more job opportunities. I think investment in infrastructure is going to be extremely important, number one, because it's needed. Montana's infrastructure grade is not good. I think I want to say D minus. So there's a lot of work to be done. There's plenty of work to be done. When you see someone out there, you know, with a shovel and a road grader, you know, they're not just killing time. Like, this is necessary business that needs to get done. But it also creates a lot of good paying jobs in communities across the state, which is really important, like, you know, everywhere. So I think that's going to, you'll see a strong focus on making sure that we can do those things and looking after the most vulnerable in our state.
How much do you think the Democratic caucus will be fighting for priorities, I guess you'd call it that, in the governor's budget? Or are you apt to be more pragmatic in that you're dealing with the day-to-day of the majority party and their priorities?
Yeah, that's a really good question, really perceptive, actually, because that's what I deal with, you know, day in and day out. Because these folks down here whose voice I am, the minority caucus in the House, you know, I need to get their work done for them. That's what my role is. Now, a lot of those priorities are going to align probably with the governor's budget. Some of those priorities may align with our colleagues across the aisle. And to be honest, if you get all three of us in a room, you might find that some of those priorities align among all three of us. And where we can get that low-hanging fruit, those easy wins, I think it's really important that we do that. I think you're going to see this session, you know, you keep hearing cut, cut, cut. You know, a lot of what we're going to do is you'll see our priorities come out in what doesn't get cut. So that should be something that people understand. It's like, well, I didn't get this raise in this program or funding for this that's really important to all of us. It's like, yes, but in a session where we're trying to trim things down, we also made sure that those programs that are important with us were as funded as possible, to the extent possible.
Certainly the political party in the minority sometimes can take the position, we'll be the party of no. We don't have to do anything. Our responsibility is not necessarily to govern. What do you think?
I would be surprised if that's my marching orders from my caucus. They all got elected, just like our friends across the aisle and the folks on the second floor. So we're all elected officials, you know, of the people, for the people, and by the people. And I think they expect us to come here and do our jobs. So we will find, you know, once we narrow down what those priorities are, I'll go talk to whoever's willing to listen. You know, I've got a decent rapport with my colleagues in House Appropriations, Randy Brodell and Nancy Balance. They're good people. I've got to work with both of them for a few sessions now. And I think there's some trust there that makes it easy to work with. And then we've got friends, obviously, on the second floor. So I think it should be a conversation that includes, you know, all of those entities. And, you know, we can put, you know, what's best for Montana out there first and foremost.
So in an ideal world, I mean, certainly as we're just starting the session.
Yeah.
And tensions can get high. People are passionate about their programs. The budget is more than just a spreadsheet. It's about priorities.
Yeah.
And tempers can flare and feelings can get hurt. But in an ideal world, how do you see appropriations? I mean, what would be the best thing? You've been on that committee before. What works? What doesn't work?
Yeah. My first session, a colleague of mine said, he said, you know, it doesn't matter where you come from on the political spectrum, whether you're far to the right, far to the left. Once you get in the appropriations room, you become a moderate because, you know, we have a constitutional obligation to pass a balanced budget. And so you can have all of these high ideals, but at the end of the day, sometimes it boils down to what are our highest priorities and what can we possibly get done. I learned very early, I think before I even got up here, a friend of mine, he was a Republican senator, and he said, Kelly, I learned something in the last few, you know, my time up there. He said, you know, you're going to find out that you can get a lot more done if you don't worry about who gets the credit. And so that's the approach I've taken in the last few sessions. Some of the things that we've been able to get done, we've done, you know, very quietly and under the radar. And I've always respected the fact that my friends across the aisle got there the same way I did. They got at least one more vote than someone else. And so they were chosen to represent their community just as I was. And as long as we maintain that mutual respect, and don't worry about who gets the credit, don't worry about the next election, you're going to find that the outcomes are going to be probably more beneficial to most people across Montana.
And I have to ask you, in this era of term limits, where new legislators on appropriations have to come up very fast and learn all of the jargon and learn how the agencies are funded and so forth, what advice are you going to be giving to them? As well as to on the floor, because when this, you know, big House Bill 2 finally hits, I mean, you know, to keep your caucus up to date so they know what is going on.
Yeah, that's a challenge. That's, you know, when the initiative for the term limits came up years ago, I can't say for sure, but I'm pretty sure I probably voted for them. I like the fact that we are a citizens' legislature, that we come from our community and are the voice of our community, and we're not, you know, career politicians. We're not well paid. I think we're almost up to $11 an hour this year, which is going to be wonderful. You know, I can get that pack of gum I've had my eye on now. So the term limits makes it really challenging, especially for a committee like appropriations, because of the technical nature of the job. In a policy committee, you know, you just get out there and you just pour your heart out and you get the good work done. It might not be as steep, but in appropriations, it's very, very technical. So my advice to the new folks is homework, homework, homework. You know, you have to do a lot of things to understand some of the language and stuff like that ahead of time before you get in the room, so you understand what's going on. Lean on your colleagues. We've got a lot of talent in there. Representative Jimmy Keene from Butte, you know, he was four terms in the House, four in the Senate. This will be his ninth term. Like, you know, he knows where some of the bodies are buried. So we have the benefit of having some of those veterans in there. So that'll be helpful. But at some point, you have to, you know that you might be the one leaning into the strike zone. You know, in my first term, I was the only member of the Democratic House in my subcommittee on general government. So when we hit the House floor, doesn't matter whether you're prepared or not. The spotlight is on you. You know, you need to carry that torch and be able to do that job whether you want to or not. So there's going to be some of that. Now, I think we've got the committee set up really well, where there's a lot of good mentorship in there on both sides of the aisle. You can learn from your colleagues across the desk from you quite a bit as well. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Representative Kelly McCarthy, Democrat from Billings, and the Vice Chair on the House Appropriations Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. It was fun. Thank you.
You've been listening to Capital Connections. I'm Jackie Yamanaka. On occasion, Chuck Johnson, Dean of the Capital Press Corps, will join me on this program. Our theme music is by the Alex Nauman Trio. Capital Connections is a production of YPR News.